Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, October 11th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, Dwayne, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's an international break. I'm going to try and fight my way through it, but it should be fun. I'm going to go to the Footy Talks event in Toronto tonight. If you don't know about that and you are in the GTA, it is a free event that's going to be held in the Rec Room down in Bremner, down by the ACC. It's going to be Alphonso Davies going to be there, among other guests. So it should be a fun time. And again, that's free. You just have to go on to the Rec Room site or the Voyager site and download the tickets. And you can come join us and have a couple beers, meet a few supporters, and talk to a Bayern Munich player. How often do you get to do that?
Yeah, how often? And talk to a Canadian men's national team player this Tuesday. Upcoming Tuesday, October 15th, Canada will be facing the United States men's national team at BMO Field. And tonight, the U.S. men's national team are facing Cuba. We're supposed to have a guest on the show. Maybe he will appear in the next few minutes, we hope. But until then, Dwayne, let's talk about the CONCACAF Nations League. How excited are you for this weekend's action?
I'm excited for Tuesday's action. And I will watch some CONCACAF Nations League, which did actually start last night. And unfortunately for Canada, there was a result that already has gone against them. That is Honduras getting the win over TNT. But it's not the biggest result. It's not the biggest blow. They got a lot of breaks in the last window. And I think basically if you're a Canadian men's national team fan, you got to hope to win your way in and not hope that a team like Honduras falls its way back down. And besides, I kind of want to have my own shot at Honduras if I'm Canada. Don't you? I mean, I know there's PTSD and all that sort of bad stuff, but I don't want to back our way over them. I want, well, maybe you do, I don't know, FAH and all that, but I want to come face first at them, not have them fall out and avoid them altogether. I think that would be beneficial to have a little trip down to San Pedro Sula. So it's an enjoyable competition. I'm much more involved in this. We talked about this the last break than I am with the European qualifiers, which are just now, like, they were okay the last time, Kevin, Europe, when they had the 24 teams better. And I saw, you know, he had those teams like Hungary and Albania kind of fighting it out at the end. But now that they've added this extra, like, layer where you have the clubs coming through from, like, the C League and stuff like that that are going to have a playoff, until we get to that, there's just no intrigue in here. I think England, if they win tonight, is through. Like, already. Like, come on. That's awful. But the CONCACAF Nations League has legitimate interest to me. I watch the little clubs. I watch the big clubs. I think the C League's interesting in its own way. Obviously, the point battle for the Hex is interesting. There's some good spreadsheets out there if you want to seek them out in the Voyager site. You can learn all about that, or you can just learn math. But it's going to be fun. And so I am a little more looking forward to this one than most. But I do miss my club football when it's not on. So another 10 days and we'll be back to normal. But we'll get through it, Kevin. We'll get through it together.
Yeah, we'll get through it. At least this time around, we have a fascinating matchup between Canada and the United States on Tuesday. And of course, for Canada, this matchup is a lot more important than for the United States of America. Because, of course, the same group and a place in the Hexagonal Championship for Canada could be possible. It's going to be difficult. And a few weeks ago, we talked about the CONCACAF rankings, which you can see right now on your screen. Mexico is still the best team in CONCACAF by far. USA, Costa Rica, Jamaica, Honduras, and El Salvador. Those would be your six hexagonal team if it were to start tomorrow. But Canada is not that far off. And a good performance, heck, a win against the United States, and spot number six could be Canada's.
Yeah, if Canada is to win this game, I think based on how I've looked at it a few times, they think they're almost guaranteed to go into six if they get a full win in this, even if El Salvador were to get two wins in the window. And that's because El Salvador, by virtue of playing in the B group, doesn't have as many points available to them. They really can only gain about 6 points in total. Canada can maybe gain as much as 15, 16. You look at the math there, and they might just barely pass them. Now, Carrasco's in there as well. You have to factor them in. I think I have this bad feeling that Canada's going to rein in all the teams they were thinking of, and then this little island with Dutch people on it's going to nicked them in the end. But it is because of the results, because Dominican's victory over El Salvador and Bermuda's victory over Panama in the last window, it has suddenly become possible. So, you know, as those that poo-pooed the fact that Canada got the 6 points against Cuba are ignoring the fact that other teams in the same situation, the same level as them, failed to do that. And because of that, Canada now has a chance to truly compete for that hex spot in this stupid format that they've created. And I'm going to call it that until it's done, because it is a stupid format, and we shouldn't, just because it's suddenly working out for us, ignore that fact. It is still a dumb format.
Well, working out for us, that's maybe premature, and we'll see. But I understand the format for the qualifying of the hexagonal championship is weird, and even so, the format to qualify for Qatar is not necessarily ideal. But when you look at the United States side, tonight they're playing Cuba, and Tuesday they're playing Canada. How differently do you approach those two games? Do you clearly just put your B squad on tonight? We know the composition of the roster, but out of this roster, do you compose a B squad for tonight and an A squad for Tuesday? That's the question for manager Craig Berhalter.
For the U.S., because although technically they are competitive games for the Americans, because of the format and the fact that the United States is, I think, mathematically guaranteed. I would have to double check that if they were to lose all the games badly, you know, and have a bunch of bizarre. No, I think it's mathematical. So there's really not very much at all for the United States to play for in this format, other than to continue to evolve and to develop their system that they want to play under Greg Berhalter. So it will be interesting to see how they approach it. I do think that that is an advantage for Canada in this window, is that they do play for the United States. I do think it is vital, as I've said many times before, that Canada get to the hacks, forget about whether maybe it's easier to go through the repechage, the child's table, whatever you want to call it. I guess it's Thanksgiving. We could call it the kids' table this weekend. Thanksgiving up here anyway. So that's maybe apt. But it's more important to me that Canada play those games against those bigger teams in the region, that test them, that help expand the fan base. You know, I've had discussions with people from across the country on Twitter, we'll call them discussions, about whether or not it would be easy to sell this game out somewhere else in the country. And my argument has always been, no, it wouldn't be, because this team does not have the general interest, or even people don't even know it's there. I still meet people to this day that are shocked that Canada has a national team. I don't know how they don't know that every nation does, but regardless, that's still out there. So the exposure of the Hex, I think, would be beneficial in growing the fan base, growing the interest in the program, which in turn would benefit the program in the longer term. So all of that is driven by getting into that Hex, and it starts with the result here. I mean, I guess it is somewhat beneficial that really, that if you look at these two, because of what happened in the last window, you now kind of have it in front of you. If you win those two games, then it does seem that it's likely that they will get into that. They might be in the top six come next June, which is when the rankings are cut off and the World Cup qualifying starts in the August window in 2020.
Now, I want to do a little fun exercise for you, Dwayne. It's hard that we have a international break with big games for the U.S. and Canada at the same time. It's not often that they play each other, you're going to tell me, and that's true. But when you look at the U.S. men's national team roster right now, okay? We got two games for them, tonight and Tuesday. Out of the roster, there's a few names that comes out. But which player will be maybe a superstar this weekend? Which one will be maybe a born star? Which player will give? Which will be the first star if it was a competition, right? First star, second star, third star for the U.S. men's national team. That first star, who is it for the weekend?
Well, I think it's got to be Pulisic. If they're going to be dominant in these games and continue to build, he hasn't been playing for Chelsea. For him to have an opportunity to play in the national team setting and go out and put a marker down would I think reassure a lot of American fans that his lack of playing time for Chelsea is not impacting his overall development. So it is a very important window for him. I think that you look at a guy like Miles Robinson, who got a last-minute call based on Walker Zimmerman's play. He's been high on a lot of people's radar within Major League Soccer for a long time. Certainly, if you talk to people in Atlanta, they think that he is every bit as key to the success of AU than you know, Martinez or other Piatti or anyone really. They think that his one-on-one defending in particular is they call it off the charts. I've heard it called the best in the United States right now, and he's a player that hasn't had an opportunity before and is going to get one because of the injury. You know, you look at a guy like Michael Bradley playing in front of his normal home fans. I think it's an important window and couple windows for him to see whether or not he remains in the United States look full-time. Sergeant. I want to say Simpson for some reason. Of course, he's one of the co-owners of Pacific FC. Not the same player.
At least it's a soccer lap. It's a soccer Freudian slip, you know?
Yes, Josh Sargent. If Josh Simpson's back, the international team, he's cap tied anyway. But yes, Josh Sargent is a player that might get a start in and could have some something to say about whether he is part of Sargent or Berhalter's long term plan. So there's a lot of players, I think, in the U.S., and that's because the U.S. hasn't done very well. And this is two winnable games from their perspective. I mean, we're based in Canada, so obviously we talk a lot about the Canadian national team, think a lot about them. But from an American perspective, they have to look at this as, you know, Canada's up and coming, and they like that because it's going to push them a little bit. They wouldn't want to play two Cubas in this window. That would be absolutely useless to them because Cuba's going to roll over and, you know, purr for them tonight, I suspect. But to them, this is still very winnable. And they not only it's very winnable, it's something they would demand that they win. If they could, like, God help them, if they lose to Canada on Tuesday, like, it will be like fire and brimstone. There'll be like torches marching upon in Chicago. And this is what's going to happen. But yeah.
You thought people complained when you didn't qualify for the World Cup? If you lose to Canada, it'll be worse. People will be like, oh, you might as well just quit the team. You lost to a hockey country. What's going on?
But anyways. Yeah. There's not a lot of widespread knowledge amongst the American outlaw sort of class out there about Canada's recent emergence as having good attacking players. They will lose their damn mind if they lose the game on Tuesday.
Kind of want to see it happen. All right, moving to Canada. Same question. When you look at Canada's roster, Dwayne, and you look at the game on Tuesday, we still got time to think about it, but which player do Canada need to be the star of this game for Canada to have a shot at winning? Is it as easy as, okay, Cavallini got to get hot and score two, or is it a bit more nuanced?
I'm going to be basic when I answer this question. It's, you know, I could go the same as I talked. I start with Will Sifton on the other side. I could talk about Davies, same kind of situation on the Canadian side. Guy that's not playing with an opportunity to get a couple, well, in Canada's case, 90 minutes in Pulisic's case, 180, but you could start there. But I actually think the player that has the most to gain in terms of reputation and understanding worldwide is Jonathan David. We know a lot about him here, and the soccer geeks down there know a lot about him, but the general population in both Canada and in the United States still doesn't know much about this kid, still doesn't consider him amongst the great young talents in this region. And I think that if he does something similar to what he's been doing for a while in a game against the United States, is the opportunity to really jump out into a greater, I wouldn't say mainstream attention, but I would certainly say soccer bubble attention, which he doesn't yet have, I think, in North America widespread. So I think that David, who we have watched, you know, with our mouth open, like, where the hell did this kid come from over the last few months? I think he has an opportunity to really put a marker down and make him one of the players that we'll be talking about for the next 4 or 5 years in this region. And then, you know, I love his story. I love this kid more than Davis in many ways, because I think that because of the way he had to crawl and fight and scratch his way to the point where he's making the impact he is now, like, in relative terms, he's a young guy that played professional at 17, but you know, still, he wasn't like the phenom for years. The way that he's had to sort of fight a little bit more for it, I think bodes well for his long-term success at it, because he's already pushed the envelope consistently. There's no reason to doubt that he won't push it more. And in fact, the argument could be made that he might be more advanced than Davies right now, simply by virtue of the fact that he's playing more.
Also, he didn't have hype behind it the way others did. He created the hype by scoring goals at a high level. And that's where the hype grew. So we'll see. But I do agree. By the way, if you're watching us on live on Twitter, for some reason, the feed is a little bit jumpy today. I know why, but I would have to stop the show and launch the show to fix it. Hopefully the feed is not too jumpy, and hopefully the video is okay for everyone. There's a lot of people watching, so I imagine it's fine. But I'm that way. I double, triple check, and when I can't, I'm freaking out. So if I understand you why. But let's continue, Dwayne. And you know, you mentioned Jonathan David, Alphonso Davies. Jonathan David for sure is the key for Canada because he's a goal scoring phenom for Canada. He's been scoring goals in the Champions League, scoring goals, of course, in Europa League last year, scoring goals in the Belgium League. But my question, Dwayne, is it going to be all on David's shoulder? When I look at this roster, when I look at the last few formations we've seen John Herdman play, and trying to think and grasp my head around, how do you face the United States on Tuesday? Who do you put where? You have to find a way to put all at the same time. Davies, David, probably Horlett, Cavallini on the pitch at the same time. How do you position your best offensive threat to have them playing together?
Yeah, it is a good question. For Osorio, you got to factor in there somewhere too as well. You know, obviously you've got a lot of midfield talent and not only so many spaces for it, and you know, conversely, not as much talent at the back. I believe, and I've said this a few times now, both on this show and on other shows that I've been asked on to, that the way Canada has to match up against the United States is they just have to lean into what they're good at. They cannot try and be cute about this. I do not believe that this will be a successful outcome if they try to reinvent themselves for this game and they try to play to the ranking, so to speak. They basically, what I'm saying in simpler terms, is they can't bunker. They've got to play on the front foot. They've got to outscore them. I think that's the only way that they win this game. So I try and get them all out there. And I don't know what that format looks like. Honestly, I don't pretend to be a tactical expert, but you can figgle it around, put your X's where you want them on the board. But I do think you need to get all of those offensive talents out there in some kind of formation that does allow them to put a semblance of defensive coverage back, because I do believe that the way to beat this United States team under Greg Berhalter is to get an effective press on them.
Yeah.
They're going to want to play out of the back. That's been consistent. They're especially going to want to play off the back in games like this, which they will not view as if they lose them from an internal standpoint. We talked about the fans losing their mind, but from an internal standpoint, they won't. They will view the process a little bit more important than the outcome because of the nature of these games. It's not that they don't want to win. I'm not saying that, but they will be willing to make more mistakes. So I think you need to get on the front foot. You need to put pressure on their back line. You need to make sure that you have the ability to cover their wing play, because the United States is going to generate their offense off of overlaps and off of speed on the wings, playing out of the back to open up that thing to release a player like Pulisic coming off those wings to create the opportunity. So you're going to need to make sure that whatever you set up, that however you do it, that you have a defensive understanding of that and defensive support across the field, while at the same time trying to lean into the abilities that you do have, which is to put the ball in the back of the net.
Yep.
So could be a fun game.
Should be a fun game. Speaking of fun, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jonathan Tannenwald should be with us.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Apologies for the delay, but we are here with our favorite American correspondent, Jonathan Tannenwald of Philly.com and the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jonathan, congratulations on your Nationals.
Oh. I'll do the apologizing. Delay was on my end, not yours. Sorry about that.
And
had something come up down here. The congratulations are because the Washington Mystics won their first WNBA title last night. I was there. It was a lot of fun.
There you go. And it certainly has been a very exciting time for DC sports over the past little while compared to the history. The city that I'm in, they're similar sort of to come to glory after years in the wilderness. But that's talk about soccer now. Let's talk about, in particular, the Nations League and the U.S. Involvement in that. Kevin and I, before you came on, Jonathan, we talked a lot about the Canada game, and we'll let you chime in there. But let's start first with what we'll start first, and that being the Cuba game tonight. What, if anything, can the U.S. gain tonight in Washington?
Well, they can gain a win, and they can gain a goal difference that would put Canada second in that group and give Canada a lot to think about on Tuesday. I mean, technically, Canada would be first in the group because they've got 6 points, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. You know. So more than six goals.
Right. Well, you have to, over the course of the two games against Cuba, you have to beat them by seven, right?
Yeah.
If you're the United States. Yeah. To put Canada second in that group, because we know that of the three teams in this group, Canada has by far the most at stake. Because they're trying to get to the number six spot in the FIFA rankings. And I wrote a long piece, sort of a Q&A, sort of explaining what the hell the Nations League is. Because for the U.S. to be playing Canada and Cuba seems on its face irrelevant, except that it matters quite a bit. Because the games count more than friendlies do in the FIFA rankings, which end up being used for Gold Cup qualification, such as it matters, World Cup qualification with the as regards the hex and the top six teams that go to the final round, and the World Cup draw when the time comes. So, yes, the games do actually matter. And I was listening to your show for a few minutes just now about how the U.S. is going to play. And I really don't know how they're going to play these. Look, obviously they want to win. They want to make a statement. They know the fan base is still fed up. But there has been next to improving. If there are times when Greg Berhalter coaching this team seems like he's doing it for the purpose of doing a coaching convention seminar and not for winning soccer games. I mean, I went to the – I'm down in Washington for the game tonight, and I went to the press conference yesterday. And I said, Greg, you know, do these games mean a little more, you know, because of sort of the Gold Cup stuff and the World Cup qualifying stakes and the fact that you can cap tie dual nationals, you know, you have a few more opportunities now than you did. And he went on this odd sort of rambling answer without really ever saying, yeah, that's all a good thing. All he had to ever say was, yeah, that's a good thing. And he went on this sort of odd rambling answer. You know, you can just leave it at, yeah, that's a good thing. You know what I mean? And
sure.
But I'll say this, by the way, and I think this will apply. I think, you know, they're going to try to play out of the back tonight, obviously. But I think this will apply to both games. Berhalter said after that Mexico game, yes, we deliberately played out of the back to excess. We don't actually have to do that. His players aren't that stupid. If Canada presses them, they will try to go over the top and get the ball to Pulisic and Sargent or whoever else is playing up there. And all I will say in that, the only other thing I'll say in that regard is if it's Giassi's artist, I will congratulate you guys on the historic result.
Oh, yeah. We've been looking forward for that result for years, Jonathan, and we're not having a lot of luck. But when we want the your perspective, because for us, we see the rise of Canada with their attacking prowess and the young guns, and we're seeing David and Davies and Cavallini. But from your perspective, when you're looking at Canada, is it a bit more fearful than usual? Because usually if the United States of America are playing Canada, well, it's not that big of a deal, and no
it's
one...
Not, yeah.
But how are you feeling now?
Wrong word.
Okay, go ahead.
Nobody's scared of the guys because they know them all.
Okay. But
I mean, look, it's
more
a, it's
worries.
A good, these guys all know, it's but the guys who play in MLS all know each other. And in that regard, I think Canada's a very good, they're a good team. I wrote in my preview, you know, everybody talks about Alfonso Davies, obviously, and you guys talk about Jonathan David. I look at a central midfield of Marc-Anthony Kay, Samuel Piette, and Jonathan Osorio and say, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, Samuel Piette, yes, and Marc-Anthony Kay especially. We'll see if Osorio is able to be fitted in that starting 11. I think he might be the odd man now, but
maybe he is. But still, there's good players there, is the point. Players who people know. and obviously who these U.S. players know, especially the ones who play in MLS. And that starts with Bradley, obviously, who's going to barge into Piet and vice versa, heaven knows how many times on Tuesday night.
Yeah, see it last a few weeks ago. We're going to see Piet versus Bradley a lot.
Maybe. Jonathan, before we... I'm curious. Let's talk about that historic result and assume it happens for a second, just for the sake of this conversation. What would the reaction in U.S. soccer, both from, we know what the fan reaction would be, but would there be any concern within those that matter?
No. There wouldn't be.
So they'd view this game as still ultimately, as I said before you came on, as a little experimental for them because, honestly, there's not a much competitively for them to gain.
Well, here's the thing. Canada wins the game up there. It would raise the stakes on the U.S. to win the game down here. That's what it would do, because I do think that the U.S. wants to make the Nations League Final Four and go beat probably Costa Rica and Mexico or something like that. If they actually won the Nations League, that would help. And heaven knows where they're going to play the semifinals. You would assume that they will play somewhere in the United States so they can make some money off it. But that would help. And that, I think, would be the United States' aim in this thing, more so than Canada simply to get into the top six, you know, of the FIFA, of the rankings. I think the most interesting thing to me, and you know what I'm going to say is the most interesting thing about Canada potentially winning, I believe, correct? You know what I'm going to say, right?
You tell me, Jonathan. No.
Herdman ain't going to shut up for the next 5 years if they win that game.
That's true.
Well, it would be the first time he'd ever beat the United States. Yeah,
that's correct. That's true. Yes. I gather he still talks about as much as he used to.
Probably more.
Actually, I don't know. He's much more harder to get a hold of now that he's with the men's national team. You don't really get access to him very much anymore. Maybe they want to shut him up. I don't know.
Well, you know, I wrote in my. Now, you guys saw the piece I did. I did it a couple days ago on, you know, here's the Nations League and why it matters, especially for these other teams in CONCACAF that don't play all that often, as, say, the United States does, which plays two games in every friendly window. And I was going to mention Canada in that regard, and I decided to not because I was more thinking about sort of the Caribbean and Central American nations. And yet, how often, as we know full well, fellas, Canada just about never actually plays, do they, especially at home?
No, don't get us started, but you're right.
Well, too bad, I suppose.
You're right. It was mentioned in the beginning of the John Herdman tenure that it is an objective of him to play twice in every single international window. We're not there yet, and I do believe funds, and I do believe financing is part of the thinking. And
I thought
the
there was some big broadcast rights deal up there that was supposed to take care of it.
Well, no, there's a broadcast deal, but it ain't big, and it's on one side, and it's on One Soccer and Canadian Soccer Business with Media Pro for the at least for the 10 years. The contract lasts for another 9, but the money is not there yet, right? The money still needs to be from the big broadcasters getting the rights from One Soccer or Media Pro or Canadian Soccer Business, but the money isn't there. And
have they added any major commercial sponsors lately?
Well, only one, Nike, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Nike partnership is not just about, like, there's not a lot of money involved. I wouldn't be surprised if we're just going to supply you with balls, kits, whatever you need. But I don't think there's a big exchange of money here.
There's a lot of in-kind. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just going to interject. No, there's a lot of in-kind sponsorships happening for sure. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Well, here's the thing. First of all, if it's a money-losing proposition for either the Canadian men or women, yes, you knew I was thinking about that too. If it's a money-losing proposition for a Canadian senior national team to play a home game, that's a problem.
It's a money-losing proposition for every team in the region other than Canada or other than the United States and Mexico to play a friendly, though.
Why?
Because it costs a lot of money to bring the teams in. there's an appearance fee that they have to factor in, and then there's the rental fee of the facility, which is why they play at BMO more than other, for our Canadian listeners out there, because that is a more cost-efficient place for them to play. I know that you don't like that, but that's why.
And BMO also, what's the real name of BMO Field? It's not BMO Field, but it's a Canadian National Soccer Stadium, and it was built for that purposes, so yeah.
No, and there's also the Canadian, it's also the airport, I'm sure you can fly from.
Logistical reasons, right. For sure.
Yeah,
But the point is this: if U.S. soccer needs to do something financially, it calls up Nike, Gatorade, and a couple other companies, and the money arrives. That's the point that the Canadian Soccer Association needs to get to. And you guys know that I have said on this show for many years how disappointed I am that the CSA has been unable to produce never mind the broadcast deal. As crazy as I think the current setup is, the fact that the Canadian Soccer Association has not been able to secure the kind of commercial sponsorship revenue that it needs, I think has been a glaring weakness for a long time.
You're 100% right, Jonathan, and even more so, look at the two big sponsors for the Canadian Soccer Program, Canada Soccer Nation, as they call themselves now. You have Allstate and you have Nike. And I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not privy to the actual details of those partnership, but Allstate, being the partnership of Canada Soccer, wouldn't be surprised if they deal with all the insurance aspect of all Canada Soccer, and that's this partnership. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nike is all about supplying equipment, supplying kits, supplying boards, supplying banners if you need, but not there to supply an exchange of money. And that's the program. You sell yourself short for years and years. When you ask for money, no one's there to give it to you. I think it's a change of mentality that has to be taking place at the top end of Canadian soccer.
The game on Tuesday, the biggest Canadian men's national team home game outside of World Cup qualifying in probably a good while, is not on any actual television channel up there.
Not
OTT
yet.
Only.
Amazing.
You're right. It is amazing, and it is.
How does it grow the game?
Well, it doesn't right now. It truly doesn't.
Can I just interject? Yeah. And this is for the listeners as well. It's not because the Canadian Soccer Association has not attempted to get the game on conventional broadcasting, or that it has been held or squatted on by One Soccer. The networks are uninterested in it. They have been offered it and have refused it. I have that on multiple sources. So there's only so far. You can lead the horse to water, so to speak, here, but if they won't drink it, you can't do much about it. And part of that, it's all a self-perpetuating kind of situation.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah, it is amazing. On that note, we have to say goodbye for today. Jonathan, thanks for jumping on, and it was fun to talk to you. We'll talk to you next week, and maybe we'll see you next week. We'll see.
It would be surprising.
All right.
I have hotels booked in Atlanta if I need them.
Ooh, all right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, the playoffs.
So,
well, good. Enjoy the playoffs. Enjoy the run of the Union. It's going to be fun to follow your work in the playoffs, something we haven't been able to do a lot over the years because of the Union's performance. But this year might be the year. Jonathan Tannenwald, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Felton. Again, sorry for being late.
And not a problem at all. Dwayne, let's just take 2 seconds, and I just want to mention that next week, of course, Dwayne and I will be covering Canada. I'll be going to Toronto on Tuesday, so Dwayne and I will give you some coverage of the CONCACAF Nations League in Toronto. It's going to be fun, and I can't wait to see Canada-USA live for the first time in my life.
Yeah, well, and obviously both Monday and Tuesday, our show will be almost entirely dedicated to these games. I mean, normally Tuesdays are for Europe. I think that Tuesdays will be for Canada v. USA this week, because we'll have to figure Tuesday out, actually, because Kevin will be traveling. Will you be here by then? I'm not sure. We'll figure that out. We'll
I'm leaving at 9:30 in the morning here, so we'll see. I'm getting to Toronto at 3:30. So Dwayne and I will figure out Tuesday. But until Monday, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie. We hope you enjoyed the show. Sorry for the video delay today. I know what to do. It should be fixed by Monday. But until Monday, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.